You ever watch this guy on television?
You all were not telling the truth, and you should not be trusted.
Congressman Matt Gaetz, thank you for what you did for your country tonight.
Be offended with the Democratic whip, not House Republicans.
Like a machine, Matt Gaetz.
Welcome to Hot Takes. I'm Congressman Matt Gaetz. Today, the Attorney General before the Judiciary Committee. Tomorrow, the CEOs of Amazon, Google, Facebook, and Apple, all before the Judiciary Committee. But let's start with the news from Florida, where a Florida man was arrested today for buying a Lamborghini with coronavirus funds. That's right, David Hines, 29 years old, arrested for illegally obtaining $2.9 million in paycheck protection funding, using it in part to buy a $318,000 Lambo that has now been seized by Uncle Sam. We covered this issue on the podcast, this notion of people who have businesses that did not see a diminution in revenue still being technically eligible for paycheck protection. Secretary Mnuchin said that there would be a temporary amnesty. If you got the money and you shouldn't have got the money, turn it back in, no questions asked, no problem. And a great deal actually was returned during that period of time. But now it's the enforcement period, baby. And if you're out there using your paycheck protection money for Lamborghini purchases, you're asking for it. This particular defendant seems to be, and I'm glad that the Secretary of the Treasury is working alongside the Justice Department to ensure that the provision intended for our people, for our workers, to keep businesses open, are not just going to purchase luxury sports cars. Yesterday, I filed the criminal referral with Attorney General Bill Barr regarding Mark Zuckerberg's perjury before the United States Congress. He claimed that there was no mechanism by which bias could interfere with the news feed and the content people see on Facebook, and yet the Project Veritas reporting clearly showed, from whistleblowers, from people inside the organization, that the algorithm was generating 70 to 80% Republicans for the suppression of content. And you even had people who were involved in the review of that content saying if they saw someone with Make America Great Again or some other support for Trump, they would label them as terrorists and suppress their content under the terrorism banner. It's ludicrous, and I think Mr. Zuckerberg needs to come clean about the statements he gave that weren't truthful. I am also preparing for our hearing tomorrow with not only Mr. Zuckerberg, but with the CEOs of Amazon, Google, and Apple as well. And if you want to know what I'm reading in preparation for that hearing, the American Conservative's Declan Leary has an amazing piece, came out July 22nd, and it walks through really not just the modern day struggle over Section 230 and the way that that allows big tech bias to persist, but also some of the predecessor pieces of legislation. What I found interesting about the piece is that it essentially chronicles the two ways that big tech gets their way in Congress. The first is money. They deploy cash not just to campaigns through PACs, and I am the only Republican that is returning to Congress that does not accept PAC money. The American people are my only special interest. But Google puts out a good amount of PAC money to members of Congress. Then the other thing they do is they put out a lot of cash to conservative organizations, to groups that, you know, have names that may be familiar to you, that endorse candidates, that support policy positions in papers, that lobby for or against bills that are before the legislature through issue advocacy loopholes in the law. And so when Google plows all this money into those groups, they have an influence over what those groups are advocating for and against. And then the final way that this article chronicles the dynamic is in personnel. You know, how often people go from working for Republicans, working for congressional committees, to then working for Google in their political operation. And you see some of the specific folks. Now, I don't blame any of these people. I know some of the names. Some of them are even acquaintances and friends of mine. I don't blame them, but I do blame a system that allows these special interests to be able to maintain what they would not otherwise be able to maintain in the absence of all this money and hiring all of the favorite people from powerful lawmakers. And that's essentially what's happened, and it's impacting free speech online. And as Americans, we need to stand for the proposition that the marketplace of ideas must be healthy. And to be healthy, it has to be competitive, and it cannot be competitive if you censor conservative viewpoints and if you utilize these special provisions of law like Section 230 of the Communication Decency Act to do so. Check out the piece in The American Conservative. It might be what I ask my questions about tomorrow. It seems foolish and counterproductive to me that so many states are picking fights with their own residents rather than working with them to solve the challenges presented by coronavirus. When you see states and local governments engaging in hyper-enforcement, hyper-discipline of their citizens, arresting people, shutting things down, rather than providing the tools, equipment, testing necessary for folks to be able to engage in life, I think that you draw resources and focus and attention away from the very important public health mission. Look, there are people who definitely need to still shelter in place. Seniors, people with comorbidities. But the notion that healthy people can't go to a gym to stay healthy is crazy to me. I had the chance to discuss this on the Sean Hannity program last night. Here was that discussion.
A co-owner of a New Jersey gym was actually arrested earlier today, put in handcuffs. His business boarded up. Matt Gaetz, this is not the United States of America that I know.
Yeah, the government should actually be working with business owners like Frank to extend safety and ensure sanitation and contact tracing, not working against them. It sounds to me like there are plenty of dumbbells in Frank's gym and in the New Jersey government if they're acting this way. Look, if you evaluate the challenge more broadly, China birthed this virus on the world through their lies, through their negligence, through their corrupt relationship with the World Health Organization. But through Operation Warp Speed, the Trump administration can provide hope within our country, to our business owners, and to everyone in the world, because we are right now engaged in the fastest development of a vaccine that the world has ever known. And we're already putting vaccine candidates into production so that when we finally get over the final hurdle in the regulatory process, we will have tens of millions that are available to bring that vaccine and to bring that hope for a normal life to a neighborhood near you.
It was also great to see Vice President Mike Pence in the great state of Florida yesterday working on that very issue I was discussing on Hannity, Operation Warp Speed. And I am so impressed that we have engaged the private sector, academia, the National Institute of Health, all under the leadership of the Trump administration to accelerate these vaccines, to get them into production, and to ensure that we can lead the world in this solution and in also the medical diplomacy that will come with it. You know, look, there's a reason why China is doing everything they can to try to steal and try to penetrate our collaboration on work for the coronavirus. And that's kind of nuts because we're going to give the vaccine to everyone. It's not like we're just going to save it for Americans. But see, China wants to win the race to the vaccine because they're the one that birthed the virus onto the world. So the vice president, the governor in Florida, doing great work.
Attorney General Bill Barr is before the House Judiciary Committee today. You can already tell the partisan tone from Chairman Jerry Nadler's opening statement. Here's what he had to say.
Again and again, you personally have interfered with ongoing criminal investigations to protect the president and his allies from the consequences of their actions. When career investigators and prosecutors resisted these brazen, unprecedented actions, you replaced them with less qualified staff who appeared to be singularly beholden to you. The message these actions send is clear. In this Justice Department, the president's enemies will be punished, and his friends will be protected, no matter the cost, no matter the cost to liberty, no matter the cost to justice.
And a strong response from Republican Jim Jordan, highlighting the hypocrisy of the Democrats and the work that still needs to be done.
Spying. That one word. That's why they're after you, Mr. Attorney General. 15 months ago, April 10th, 2019, in a Senate hearing, you said this sentence, quote, "I think spying on a political campaign is a big deal." Spying on a political campaign is a big deal. It sure is. And since that day, when you had the courage to state the truth, they attack you. They've been attacking you ever since, every day, every week, for simply stating the truth that the Obama-Biden administration spied on the Trump campaign. 1 year ago, New York Times headline said this. 1 year ago, quote, FBI sent investigator posing as assistant to meet with Trump aide in 2016. The FBI sent a young lady who used the name Azra Turk to meet Papadopoulos in September of 2016. They sent someone pretending to be someone else to meet a person associated with the Trump campaign. You know what they call that? You know what they call that? Spying. 1 month later, October 2016, they used the dossier to spy on Carter Page. The salacious, unverified dossier, Jim Comey's words, not mine. They took it to the FISA court, didn't tell the courts that the Clintons paid for it, didn't tell the court that the guy who wrote the document, Christopher Steele, had already communicated to the Justice Department that he was, quote, desperate to stop Trump from getting elected. And guess what? There were 15 more lies that they told the court. 17 in total. They're outlined by the Inspector General, each and every one of them in his 400-page report. But guess what? Chairman Nadler refuses to allow Mr. Horowitz to come here and testify and answer our questions.
This was my exchange with the witness panel.
Mr. Attorney General, you've described the prosecution of Roger Stone as righteous. That's clearly something that the president and I disagree with you on. I would suggest that perhaps the prosecution of Andrew McCabe, who lied four times, thrice under the penalty of perjury, would be more righteous. I would suggest to you that uncovering the criminal conspiracy that existed where people in our own government were trying to convince intelligence agents and operatives around the world to destabilize our elections and to discredit our president would perhaps be more righteous. But as we sit here today, I don't think that Mr. Stone or Mr. McCabe or any of those other folks are killing anyone or burning down our buildings. And so I'd like to focus our effort on the most acute need I believe our country has. Is it your view then that Antifa and other violent people engaged in these acts would simply stop, would simply accept that as their sole victory? Or is it your expert opinion, having dealt with a number of law enforcement and criminal cases in your legal career, that they wouldn't stop, that they would go to the next town, to the next community, and potentially inspire more violence?
There's no doubt in my mind that it would spread.
And what comfort can you give Americans in my district and around the country that you will stop this, that you will stop the burning and destruction of federal property, and that you will give confidence to regular Americans that they can go out in the streets without the risk of this terrorism?
Well, as you can see in Portland, we have a relatively small number of federal officers who have been withstanding this for almost 2 months. It's a great strain, but we cannot just stand aside and allow the federal court to be destroyed.
Confucius Institutes are China's beachheads at our major universities and institutions of learning and research. Confucius Institutes are dangerous. They allow China to execute on their strategic vision for the future of the world, oftentimes in a way that's competitive with America, and not competitive in a friendly, we both make our each other better kind of way, competitive in the unfair, stealing, putting us out of business, and making the world less safe kind of way. And so it's noteworthy to remember who in politics seems to embrace these Confucius Institutes and the bad objectives that they oftentimes serve. National Pulse's Natalie Winters has the story on Joe Biden's visit back in 2012 to a Confucius Institute on a college campus, where he said Xi Jinping is a straightforward, an open leader, actively praising him. And this was at the Confucius classroom at the California-based International Studies Learning Center. And so I don't think that someone who would go and praise the work of Confucius Institutes, praise the work of Xi Jinping, offer him up as an open, straightforward leader, is the type of person that we need making the major decisions in our country. Congratulations to the National Pulse and Natalie Winters on the story.
Larry Kudlow was on State of the Union with Jake Tapper on Sunday, and he had a number of positive reports regarding the American economy. Here's Larry Kudlow.
Many of us have been making this point for months. As you know, you can't reopen the economy without the virus contained. You, President Trump, others at the White House pushed for the economy to reopen. We did, and now cases have skyrocketed and the economy appears to be taking yet another hit. Isn't it clear that the country reopened too quickly, wiping away the progress that had been made, prolonging harm to the economy?
Well, Jake, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of generalizations there. First of all, I don't think the economy is going south. I think it's going north. And I think that there's a bunch of indicators. Let me focus on that. I know something about that. You're in a housing boom right now. You're in a retail sales boom right now. You're in an auto car boom right now. Manufacturing, look at the ISM indexes, all are booming. New business applications are skyrocketing. Apple Mobility Index is very strong. And the jobs picture remains strong. There was a number of unemployment claims last week that slipped, but it was a seasonal adjustment problem. It's actually the lowest since early March. Continuing claims, which is going to predict the July jobs number out in a week or so, are the lowest they've been in almost 3 months. So I don't buy it.
To get the economy moving, we're going to need to get this virus under control, and then it's my expectation that we'll have pent-up demand, that we'll have an American economy that's rebounding. And if we've got to trust somebody to rebuild the economy, I certainly trust the guy who built it, Donald Trump, not the person, Joe Biden, who was vice president during one of the most puttering efforts of the American economy. And so I think with production, with emphasis on investment and lower taxes and empowered Americans, President Trump can do for a second time what he did previously, and that is build the strongest American economy that has ever existed. Thanks so much for listening to Hot Takes. I'm Congressman Matt Gaetz. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, leave us a review, and make sure to join us tomorrow for more Hot Takes.